Latest album, Too Low for Zero, is your 24th album. It's quite a lot of music that you've written. And in many ways, it's an album that sees you back in the running, as it were, where you've released three songs now, singles, and they're doing very well as hits. It seems there's a resurgence of interest and success in your music.
Yeah, it's the first time I've had three hit singles since 1973 or 74, I think, something like that. The other albums haven't done badly at all recently, and I've had Blue Eyes was a hit, of course. But this album, when we made it, I could tell as soon as I wrote the songs that they were pretty good songs, and I was really happy. Not that the others haven't been, but I know it's just going back to the old formula of using Bernie all the time and using the original three other guys. And also, I'd settled into recording with Chris Thomas and my producer, and I think we've gotten used to each other by now. And also, that all the songs really were written on synthesizer, which is a real first for me. I've never written on synthesizer before.
And
so it seems to really work very, very well. I can't actually wait to record the next one, which is going to be recorded over Christmas.
Now, you mentioned Bernie Taupin. He's the man that you started out as a singer-songwriter with way back in, in the early 70s?
1967.
Now, first of all, let's talk about why you two parted company as a full-time songwriting team, and then again, why you came back together.
Well, we didn't, actually. And I spend quite a lot of time actually explaining this. I came off the road in 1976, and I really didn't do anything to do with music at all. I concentrated on becoming chairman of a football team, and for 2 years I did nothing, because I didn't want to. I'd had enough. And then I had a song called Ego, which was an old Bernie Taupin, Elton John song, which I went back into the studio to do in 78. And we recorded that, and having not been in the studio for 2 years, I started to write a lot of songs, melody first, which I never used to, and Bernie wasn't there, and Gary Osborne was, who was a friend of mine, a big mate of mine. And so Gary sort of finished off the songs that I sort of half splurged out over the microphone. And so it was good, because it gave me a chance to write with somebody else, and it was completely unprepared for. So that was more or less the Single Man album, which came out then at the same time as Bernie Taupin released an album with Alice Cooper. So consequently, people suddenly thought that we'd broken up or split up. And in fact, we never ever split up. In fact, there's a song on 21 at 33 called Two Rooms at the End of the World, which is about people thinking that we had split up. But it did us both good to write with other people. In fact, Bernie's got a new track on the Motels album. He's been writing with the Motels, he writes with the Rod. So it was really a misunderstanding, but one that I was pleased that happened, because, as I say, I'd never really had the chance to write with anybody else before. Even though I'd encouraged Bernie to write with other people, it was very difficult for me, because I'd gotten so used to writing with one particular sort of person. So that happened, and then I started writing. I've written some songs with Tom Robinson. I enjoy writing with Tom a lot, and I've written one with Tim Rice on the Jump Up album. So I don't ever want to lose that freedom again of being able to write with whoever I want to, but there does still remain a certain magic between when it works between Bernie and I and Nigel Olsen, Dee Murray and David Johnson. And with Too Low for Zero, the album, it seems to have it was such a pleasurable year to work on stage with the guys again, and to like each other better than we ever did before, which is, you know, after all these years. And it's been a very, very, very successful album. In fact, it's the only area that it's been very disappointing in sales is America, actually, because I don't really want to go into that, because I could say things that could lead to legal actions, but I won't. But hopefully that the next album may come off out on a different label in America. That's all I can say at this point. But the new single, Blues, which is in fact was the first single over here, has now was 38 with a bullet last week, and looks like it's going to be a big hit in the States. Well, Standing was top 10, but the album didn't even get in the top 30. There's something very dodgy about it. But apart from that, I'm very, very happy with the way the album's gone. I'm absolutely ecstatic.
You're no stranger to the charts, the hit parade, whether it's singles or albums. I wonder whether it bothers you if you don't get away with a single or an album, whether you don't get the sort of chart positions that you like, or whether you feel, because of all the experience and the albums and singles you've done in the past, that it may not happen this time round, but the next one probably will.
Well, I think you've got to take the rough with the smooth. If something genuinely isn't selling, and it's a stiff, as they say, then you really can't do anything about it. It's just, I got very, very upset, because Standing was a top 10 single in America. It was the first single released off the album, and the album didn't even get into the top 30, which was, there is I'm old and oldie world enough to know that if you have a hit single and a top 10 single, the album usually is a top 30 album. But I didn't seem to get much support from the company over there. So, but on the other hand, the album throughout the rest of Europe, and the last two or three albums, I've concentrated on Europe because I've never really sold that many albums in Europe. And it's done phenomenally well, and I can't really complain. It's just that it would have been nice for the album to sell a few more copies in America, because I know it could have done. But we'll see with the next one. The next one is, I don't know, as I say, I wrote every single one of those songs on the synthesizer, which is, I find a synthesizer that I can work, which is, I'm not very mechanical.
I'm surprised that you have actually started working on that synthesizer, because we know you really as the man that loves to sing those nice, slow, sexy ballads with a grand piano. And you've always stayed away from the changing technology in the recording studio. This time round, you've changed that.
Well, it's not a question of changing or staying away from it. It's a question of not being able to understand it. Song for Guy, of course, being... there have been a couple of instances in my career when I have actually played all synthesizer parts, like there's a couple of tracks on the Blue Moves album. Yamaha have come out with this fabulous synthesizer that I can work. You just put a ticket into it and it feeds a sound into it. And it was the first time I wrote a couple of the songs on Too Low for Zero by just... playing to a drum machine, a Linn drum machine. For example, Crystal on the album and Too Low for Zero were recorded, and then everyone else was put on afterwards. And it was great. It was because there's only so much, you know. You sit down at the piano and you think, oh my God, what can I write now? It is very, very limited as far as texture goes. And I didn't aim to write any of the songs. You know, everything, usually the best things happen by accident, and they did on this album, because I just got into Montserrat a week late. Everyone was sitting there drumming their fingers, so I'd stayed over to watch some football games. And when I got there, the pressure was good, because I had to really write and record exactly how I used to, like in the Elton John album, Tumbleweed Connection album. In other words, we had 2 weeks to do the album, 2 or 3 weeks at the most to do the album, and we did it. And that's how I want to do the next one as well. That seems to be the way I thrive and I work best. So it will be an Elton John, Bernie Taupin album, but on the other hand, I would like to do some separate singles, because in the old days we used to do lots of albums, and then we used to do separate singles as well, like Lucy in the Sky, Don't Go Breaking My Heart. So in that respect, then I'd like to sort of further my career with writing with Gary from that responsibility, because I really enjoy writing with Gary, and it's nice to actually write some songs where you have actually an interest in the topic that's going to be sung. So I'm hopefully going to do that this year, because I don't want to end up with Gary being disappointed because I'm not going to write with him anymore. But it's just a slow process. At the moment, I've got to seize on a chance of getting another album out with all Bernie songs while it's still working and while I'm enjoying it. You know, I'm still working with the band. I've got another whole year lined up of touring, and I'm enjoying it. And one approaches 40, I mean, age doesn't really mean anything, but I mean, there are certain times in one's life where I don't think I will want to be cavorting around the world non-stop playing to that rock and roll circuit. But at the moment I am enjoying it, so we'll keep on doing it and see what happens.
Now, you mentioned that earlier you mentioned that you were working with Bernie and the three-piece band that you started out with, Davey, Dee and Nigel, yeah. And Ray Cooper also, who's helped you on percussion as well. Now, you did 14 sold-out nights at the Hammersmith Odeon over Christmas in 1982, a year ago. I wonder why you did that and what plans you've got to tour in this country again, because obviously there's an audience out there that wants to see you.
Yes, well, I hadn't played England with a band for a long time. God, it must have been 5-6 years. I'd done the Ray Cooper tour, but I hadn't played with that band or with a rock and roll band. And I thought, I'm either going to go into Wembley's pool, which I don't like. I don't like that for concert. I don't really want to go into Earl's Court. So what I'll do, I'll play 14 nights at Hammersmith Odeon, because Hammersmith is my favourite venue to go and see a rock and roll show in London. It's a great atmosphere. Unfortunately, towards the end, it drove me crazy, because 14 nights in any one place does... I mean, I like to move on. I thought it was the best venue and the fairest venue to play to people in London, because... I don't know, there's something about Wembley Pool I don't like. I did one concert there and I vow I never go back there again. And I just thought if I played through the provinces in Manchester and places like that and played smaller theatres, it was not really fair to come to London. And if I'm going to go play in London, and if one of them was going to be on the TV on Christmas Eve, then let's go to somewhere that's one of the best rock and roll gigs in the world, and that's Hammersmith Odeon. And we did it. It's just unfortunate to say the least, that after 14 days there, you just begin, you know, you get to the same dressing room every night, and we were getting very, very tired by that point. And I think if we'd have delayed recording the Too Low for Zero album until after the British tour, it would have been a disaster area. I was determined to get it made between the American tour and the English tour, because there was like a six-week gap, and we were really playing very, very well. And but Hammersmith is... It is. I shan't play it for 14 nights next time.
But it is on your list to do in the future.
Yes. Yes. I'm doing a whole... I had a whole tour planned next year with Rod. He's pulled out of it because he wants to do something different, so that's fair enough. But I should be touring the whole... I should start in Australia and New Zealand in February, and I should be doing a British tour, I think, in some summer dates, so I might do some outside dates, I don't know. But we'll definitely be doing British dates, yes.
You mentioned Rod Stewart. Now, what was the problem there? Why, initially, the plan was that the two of you were going out on the road together, and from the music side of it, as a fan of both of your musics, I thought, what a wonderful idea, combining those two people.
It was a great idea, because I didn't want to go on stage and do my hits and him do his hits. We were going to do sort of like, it was going to be like a 1980s revamped version of the Steam Packet, and doing all old Motown medleys and stuff like that. Great old Sam and Dave stuff. It was on the cards. We had these dates booked in Australia. I think... he's really wanting to concentrate. He wants to go in the studio and do an album, which he's doing at the moment. And his last album didn't do very, very well in the States at all. In fact, apart from in Europe, which it did exceedingly well, it was one of his most selling albums. So I think he wanted to go into the studio, which is, you know, whatever his decision is fine by me. I mean, there was a story saying we'd fallen out. Well, I just got a little annoyed because I got a telex, that's all, not a phone call. But now it's all been sorted out. So maybe in the years to come we'll do so. I just thought it would... For me, the time was right next year to do it. I was really looking forward to going on stage and playing some music. And I knew everybody else would be expecting us to go on stage and be doing like 10 minutes of hits. And I didn't want to do that at all. But no, he's not going to do that now. So I'm left to soldier on. So I should probably add somebody else to my band. Not for recording, but for afterwards. Because there's no way that I can play some of the stuff from Too Low for Zero with just a keyboard player on stage. But no, I'm booked out the whole of next year. I'm looking forward to it.
How do you feel about the image of Elton John? In some ways, you're seen as a slightly outrageous character, certainly with the sort of Sergeant Pepper outfit that you wear on stage, or did a year ago. And yet, conversely, you appeal to young and old. Mums and dads like your music, and so do the young teenagers.
Well, I mean, I get away with murder, you see. Whatever I say in my career, whatever, Elton John says this and Elton John admits to doing this, nobody believes it, which is great. Oh, no, Elton couldn't possibly do that. No, I do have that sort of image. And the funniest thing last year when we toured America, I couldn't believe, and I was delighted, how many young people we got. And really, that was a real boost to our ego. And our stateside tour last year, which was mostly done outside, was really phenomenal, because we got so much more young people than I ever thought we would. We get a cross section. I think if people come and see me on stage now, they expect to see something humorous, a little outrageous. And who am I to sort of begrudge them it, really? Because those people, I have a tremendous loyal audience. I can go for 2 or 3 years without having a hit record, which I have, and I still can sell out the tours and everything. So that's a great, great comfort to know that people will still come and see you live. That's, you know, if you put on a good live act, then people will always come and see you. So if they're gonna keep coming, then they'll want to see something slightly different all the time, and still something slightly tongue in cheek. And I enjoy it as well. I mean, it's not the big high old shoes and glasses anymore, but it's something. You know, it has to be. It has to be interesting before, I mean, I'm going to get on stage in it. Because before you just get on, you're getting dressed to get on stage, I think, for me, it's important when I wore that sort of general's outfit last year, which, I mean, I couldn't have come at a worse time. I mean, I had it designed, it was sort of like coincided with the Argentinian crisis, Falklands crisis, and I thought, oh, Christ, that's all I need is for someone to pick up that this looks somewhat like General Galtieri. And, in fact, I called it my General Galtieri outfit. But luckily enough, by the time it sort of passed on by the time I actually first wore it on stage. And I think people do, it's important to feel dressed up, or, you know, that was, you know, 10 minutes before I was going on stage and I had that on, I was ready to go out there. It's important to keep your enthusiasm up to that extent. Otherwise, really, there are danger signs that you shouldn't do it. But I mean, I'm quite unhappier now probably than I have been for the last 4 or 5 years. As far as my producer, I get on great with Chris Thomas.
What about you as a man yourself? Are you a quiet, shy person? Because we see that side of you on stage, but we never really get an idea of what you are like as a person. Always reading about you in gossip columns recently, the story between you and Rod. You know, as you say, people will believe what they will, and hopefully they'll believe the truth. But what are you like as a person? Are you someone that cares a lot about different issues?
I think so, yes. It's one of the greatest things you have to use, that you get going for, is that if people think they know everything about you, they do about me, and they think, oh yeah, we know about Elton John, but actually they don't know anything at all. Which is kind of useful to keep prolonging, because, you know, one wants people to know what you're like, but on the other hand, you don't. Your personal life is very important, and you keep it to yourself. Yes, I take issues very. I mean, having been involved in local council issues with my football club now, and now I know. I mean, I don't take things like that for granted anymore. I mean, when I first became chairman of the football club, for example, one thought that one could more or less get anything one wanted, and I soon found out that was going to be completely untrue and go by the board. Yeah, I have a lot of different interests and a lot of different issues which I find important, but I don't really do interviews very much. I don't do any press interviews hardly at all. You never see me do any press interviews. Because I really don't. I spend 2 or 3 hours with someone talking about something that I really, really believe in, and I think they've done a good job. And then when I see what the editor's done to it, and then it's all down to about sex life, hair transplant, and everything like that, and you think, oh, why bother? I'm 36, and I might as well devote some of my time to doing something else. So, I am. You wouldn't believe some of the things that I get up to. We won't even go into them.
You mentioned your age. Now, you've mentioned it twice now. Is that something that bothers you? I mean, I've just passed my 34th birthday, and I don't really care about
age. No, I don't. No, in fact, I enjoy it. When I'm in my 30s, I've enjoyed my life much more than I had in my 20s. I mean, when I was 29, I was saying, oh, let's get to 30 and get it over and done with. But actually, when I became 30 and I had responsibility thrust on me in the form of the chairmanship of the football club, then I really began to enjoy my life. No, I keep going on about my age, but I mean, there are certain things in this life. I mean, I don't want to end up like Chuck Berry, you know, sort of like picking up some rubbishy band and paying them peanuts and playing out a tune. That side of show business does not appeal to me. One has to know one when to stop to a certain extent.
You don't want to become, say, a Frank Sinatra or Charles Aznavour in 1990 or 2000?
Well, I don't know. At least Frank Sinatra, what he does is got some taste. I mean, Chuck Berry, I mean, God. Anyway, no, I don't want to go on about Chuck Berry. I will always be a performer because I think I enjoy performing, but in what ways? I mean, there is more to life than going round the world. That's why I gave up in 76 and came off the road for 2 years. It was just because I couldn't stand that sort of lifestyle anymore, and luckily I had something to bounce into with the football club. But they're getting to a point where it's not any fun anymore, it's becoming routine. I think there are other things to do. If I don't take a chance soon and start doing some instrumental albums and some other things like that, but while I'm in my late 30s and 30s, I might as well just, you know, enjoy it while I can, because I really am enjoying the company of everybody around me. It seems that everybody around me, in my band and my setup, we've known each other for at least 15, 16 years, and we like each other still, which is quite an achievement in this business, because it's not the nicest business to be.
In the past few years, you've been to many countries, including Russia, and this summer you went to China with Watford's football team. What was that trip about? Was it just a musical trip, or was it strictly football?
It was absolutely strictly football. There was nothing musical in it whatsoever. It was very, very protocol, lots of speeches, and very enjoyable. Musically, China is no way anywhere near Russia as far as, like, accepting the bands like The Who or whatever. I mean, when I last went to Russia with Ray Cooper on that tour, we'd more or less set up the way for people through Harvey Goldsmith for people like The Who to go over there and things like that. And of course, then they have invaded Afghanistan and put the kibosh on it. But they do want those sort of things out in Russia. And until I refuse to be a political tool in the fact that I won't be told where I can go. Now, United Nations say I can't go to South Africa. And until I go there and have a look, I've just been there and I played in Sun City. And I made sure I went down there when Rod Stewart was down there so that people can buy tickets, and they're both, it's a completely mixed audience, fine. And George Benson just been out there before me, because sometimes the only way for a musician to improve things and is to go down there and play and see for themselves. I find it incredibly hypocritical that the United Nations can tell me that I shouldn't go and play in South Africa, where I can go to America and play in front of, and they have the Ku Klux Klan and they have the National Front over here. So as a musician, I make up my own mind where I want to go, and I want to go to as many places as possible. Next year on tour in Europe, we're going to Poland, Czechoslovakia and Hungary, I hope, as well.
Did you make the trip to Sun City in South Africa because you wanted to make a statement about apartheid, or was it simply that you were invited by a foreign country and you felt, well, I'd like to go?
I was. They'd been asking me to go for about 2 years, actually. When I went to see Rod down there and had a look for it, so I wasn't going to take a chance and just say willy-nilly, I'm going to go out there. And then I didn't see anything particularly wrong in playing in Sun City. I'm not judging a country's politics in total, and I wouldn't in any countries. It's none of my business to judge a country's politics. But as a musician, I'm not going to be told by the United Nations where I can and where I don't go, because I don't think, I think they've got a nerve, and B, I just think that there's so much good can become. I want to go back to Russia as soon as possible, and they shut down the bloody airliner this year. I mean, it's not the people in the street. It's the people in the street you want to go and play to. I mean, that's the last thing when I went to Russia, the last thing I remember when we left Leningrad on the train, it was the kids stuffing all the presents through and saying, please come back and see us, please come back and see us. And I thought, yeah, one day I must come back and see you. And I don't care if they got salt mines or Siberian prisoner of war camps or whatever. If I'm going over there, if I want to go over there and I make the decision that I'm going, and nobody's going to stop me. I get increasingly annoyed, especially when America sits on its high horse and says, well, you can't do this and you can't do that, when that has, it can at the moment, I mean, with moral majority and things like that, it's one of the most non-attractive countries, I would think, to go and visit.
Well, let's come back home to Britain, where you are favoured by the royal family. In fact, on various occasions, you've been a special guest to the Queen, in California when she visited that area in 1982, at birthday celebrations at Windsor. I think you've even been to the theatre with Princess Margaret.
Yes, I did go to the cinema once with Princess Margaret.
So it's quite an honour, really. You've been accepted by the monarchy of this country. You've been accepted by its people as well.
Yeah,
Are you happy with that?
It is an honour to be accepted by the monarchy, but I mean, actually, when one gets to know them, because they are just regular people and very, very, very hospitable and very nice people, because you always feel, you know, no matter how many times you've been in this situation among them, you still feel in awe. But it's very nice. I mean, it's very, what do you say to Princess Margaret when you take her to the island? Would you want a tub or would you like an ice cream?
Well, what did you ask her?
I don't know. I was absolutely so petrified. I mean, I was just trying to make sure that I walked in the right place and sat in the right seat, I think. But no, it was. I have had. I've done some concerts for them, and I've got to know, not to know them, but I've been in their company a lot, and they've been very, very nice to me, yeah. And one sees all walks of sorts of life, and I've been treated pretty well by every sort of person. So I mean, I'm pretty lucky like that. I've got one of those broad appeals. I mean, I'm not the appeal of a broad.
Into your second decade in music, let's talk about the music that surrounds you, Elton. Now, you've been playing music through the progressive 60s, the art rock of the early 70s, the punk of the mid 70s. All kinds of changes have gone on. Let's talk about the music of 1983 and how you see that.
Well, my music, I can just say that I don't think my music's changed that much at all. I mean, I can't. When the punk thing happened, I mean, I remember sitting in bed and being terrified by it and thinking, well, this is not going to change. It can't change me. I suddenly didn't go off and start making punk-style records. But it did start me thinking, and it did give us some good old shakeabout. The music that's happening now, I mean, there are so many things I really love. I mean, some of the records in the charts, some of the young bands, they seem to be enjoying it now, which is one thing about it, which is Culture Club I adore. I think he's got one of the... There are so many good people with good voices. He's got a great voice. Sting's got a great voice. A guy out of UB40's got a great voice. There's a lot to admire that's going on now. I mean, what's actually happening, if you look at the American charts, is the British charts, it's a British invasion over again. Well, sort of similar to Beatlemania, but sort of like the early 70s type thing, when it's... there are bands over there that and records that by guys like Thomas Dolby, Blinded Me With Science, which is one of my favourite records, should have been a hit here. It was never a hit here, but it was a massive hit in the States. Whereas there are English acts and British acts that are making it now. They haven't even had any success back here. So I think it's very exciting that's happening now.
In some ways, the showbiz and the music and the quality are coming back into pop music, in a sense. We lost it all when the revolution, as it was called, of punk came in and all those traditions went out the window. It seems that that's all coming back again now, isn't it?
There seems to be a nice sense of humour about things as well, which I really like a lot. That was one thing that seemed to happen. I mean, the punk thing was kind of, as I say, dangerous and refreshing in a way, because I remember sitting there in bed thinking, Christ, what's going to happen to me? And sitting there calling me a boring old fart, and I thought, well, perhaps you are. You know, you're sitting in bed in Windsor. You know. And it was... There wasn't a great deal of music came out of it, but bands now like The Clash, I think, are great. I mean, I really think they've improved. I can't really sort of hum you any great songs that came out, apart from Alison by Elvis Costello, which is, he's one of the best songwriters there are anyway. But no, there are lots of, people do seem to be admitting to liking it a bit more and enjoying it a bit more, and playing on stage. I mean, no, they just seems to be enjoying it, which is good. There's no point in doing this at all if you're not enjoying it. I've met so many people who've been so miserable, and we've had a couple of people on our label that've had success and worked hard for it, and yet they haven't had a good, you know, they think, oh, come on, cheer up a bit. And it's, I don't see, if you're getting pleasure out of it, then that's, God, that's a bonus on top of it all. I mean, you're lucky enough to be able to do it anyway. But and I think it's quite a healthy looking scene. I think Boy George is wonderful.
What about working with someone like Boy George on a future record, or another star of the 80s, one of the young faces that's popping into the charts now? Would you like to do something like that?
I mean, that appeals to me, yeah. It's just I'm quite shy, and I'm too shy to approach him, but George did come to one of our shows at Hammersmith at Christmas, and he was wonderful. Very, very funny. And I just love his voice. It's his voice. I mean, he's like... there's not many British kids that come along with a great voice like that. And he sounds like Smokey Robinson with a bit more balls to him. You know?
Currently, another single's in the charts, and your things are going very well for you. Mm. Looking into the next year and the years ahead, how do you see it in summary?
I don't look forward to anything. You can't plan anything. If the next album can go as well as this, as far as writing it and production and enjoying it goes, well, then fair enough. I think that'll do. I'm looking forward to making that. Although sometimes when you make albums, it's like doing a bit like an examination. You never know what's going to happen. But I'm looking forward to touring next year, because we start off in Australia and New Zealand, where my album's done, is like near quadruple platinum over there. So I mean, it's the biggest album I've ever had over there practically. So this album has really done a lot to sort of cement my popularity in Europe and for sort of re-enhance it everywhere else. I mean, it's nearly platinum album over here, which is the first platinum album I've had for God knows how long, and I don't mind admitting it. And it's very exciting again. It's very nice, and it's been really no conscious effort. It's just again waiting around for something to happen, right place, right time. Back with the four-piece band again. Back with the producer. Back with Bernie. That was. And if you're prepared to hang around and take the disappointments as well as the, you can't be number one every time in the charts. And I knew that when I was coming off the road in 1976. But sometimes it is hard to sort of condition yourself to it, because there's some things you do believe in that you think are as good as other things, and other things that are successful, and things like ego, which I really believed in, and just did nothing. So, you know, you have to condition yourself. But at least I'm enjoying it probably more than any other time in my life, so that's good.